If you'd asked Kayla Williams' family or friends 5 years ago if she'd be fighting in Iraq, they would have laughed at you. She was a college graduate, owned her own home, had a steady relationship. Not exactly soldier material. But Kayla Williams felt unchallenged. Not to be trite here, but she wanted to be all she could be. In early 2001, when she enlisted, the world was different than it is today. And moments after the events of 9/11, this fluent Arabic speaker knew she would soon be in harm's way. Williams wrote a book about being a woman in the army stationed in Iraq. She calls it Love My Rifle More Than You. Anne Strangeshamps asked her about it.
Your book begins sort of straight up with the statement, sex is key to any woman soldier's experience in the army. How so?
Your gender, when you're in the military, even underneath all of the heavy equipment that we're wearing, it's really obvious. It's apparent. And you always know that the male soldiers that you're working with know you're a female. Even if they're treating you with respect, even if they're treating you well, they still know that you're a girl. And when you walk away, you know that they're probably talking about what you look like. And that can get incredibly draining and frustrating to know that as much as you strive to be a professional and be treated as an equal, that there's always this undercurrent of sexuality, of gender present.
And you're very objectified, wouldn't you say? I mean, you also write that as a woman in the army, you're either a bitch or a slut.
Yeah, I definitely felt objectified quite frequently. Just walking down the line to get to chow, to get to food, when I was actually at an established base and being able to feel eyes upon me. Not that I'm particularly attractive, but because there's a deployment scale of hotness where women get an extra few points on the attractiveness scale just because there are so few of us. And knowing that as soon as we step off the plane when we get home, we'll be average again. But that while we're there, we get all this extra attention.
But I mean, did the women soldiers enjoy this? If suddenly they're... there's a phrase for it, right? Queen for a day?
Queen for a year.
Queen for a year.
The whole year that you're deployed, yes. And certainly it could really go to the heads of some women, especially those that were maybe a little younger or from smaller towns, weren't as used to male attention. Certainly it can go to your head. I could easily see the temptation for it. And the longer I was there, the more I realized how dangerous it was. Because if you take advantage of it, it affects your reputation very negatively. Even if you don't do anything, just by being friendly or outgoing or smiling, people will assume that you're looking for more than just friendship and be considered a slut. That was really exhausting to deal with as well. And I decided that if I could either be respected but considered a bitch or possibly liked but considered a slut, I would rather be the bitch. And it certainly changed the way that I interacted with people quite a bit after a certain point in the deployment, probably six or 8 months in.
This seems odd because at the same time, you've told me that one of the main things you feel as a soldier is this intense bondedness, intense connectedness to the other soldiers, all the guys in your unit. And at the same time, these are the guys who are treating you like either a bitch or a slut.
Right. And it's an incredibly confusing and difficult and frustrating line to walk, to trust people with your life, to count on them for everything and to be willing to give up your own life for them while at the same time having this subtle undercurrent that's kind of interfering with that bond that you form. It's difficult, and it's something you don't necessarily even want to think about or acknowledge. I certainly didn't while I was there. And even now, looking back, it's really hard for me to try to figure out how to look at things. And I think a lot of the types of experiences that I had can exist on multiple levels, if that makes any sense. Guys in the army deal with each other in a strangely sexual way sometimes, the way that they joke around with each other. They'll pretend to hump each other, for example. And this isn't them sexually harassing one another. This is their strange way of bonding. So if they deal with a female soldier in that same way, are they sexually harassing the female soldier or are they accepting her? And so to kind of struggle with wondering about that and wondering what exactly is going on and how you should react, it's difficult. It's hard to know exactly how to react to things.
Were you ever afraid of sexual violence, afraid of being raped?
No, because, you know, I had a gun all the time. You always carry a weapon. It's pretty much a constant presence. And so, as strange as that may sound, that is definitely part of your knowledge, this knowledge that if a guy starts to cross a line, you may start to feel intimidated, but you still have a weapon.
It's interesting thinking about the position of women in the military and the way you were, because partly it seems like this very complicated dynamic of power and powerlessness. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I've gotten such an impression for so long that in America we really like to downplay the importance of power in interpersonal relationships, but it's crucially important.
I was also thinking that that's kind of a theme, the theme of power and powerlessness that comes up in your book in so many different ways, and it's maybe an awkward transition, but I wanted to ask you about some of the work you'd done with Iraqi detainees.
There were two occasions that I had interactions with detainees. Once was just very brief and low-key. The day that Uday and Kusay were killed, I happened to be in Mosul, and they picked up a lot of detainees, and I assisted in some initial screenings. And one of the men who had been picked up was just very drunk and extremely belligerent and uncooperative. And another soldier and I trying to get just some basic information out of him, his name and, you know, where he was from and that sort of thing. And he was so incredibly belligerent that we ended up yelling at him quite a bit. And I was shocked to realize how, I don't know the right word, I don't want to say it wasn't exactly pleasurable, but how much of a relief it can be to just scream at someone, because it's something that we don't do. And especially, I think, for women, if you want to bring up that whole power versus powerlessness issue again, for women to get to be in total control of a man and scream at him is something that is very unusual. And I was really almost horrified to realize that it could be something that I didn't hate. It's really strange to look back on and remember it, because when you're in, you know, when I'm in a nice, clean, well-lit studio where I can get a cup of coffee and I'm not carrying a gun, it seems so very remote. but yeah, at the time, you're just so frustrated and so angry, and you've been trapped in this foreign country and you have no way to leave or go home, and you're always in danger. You're just fed up with the fact that you're trying to help people and they're periodically trying to kill you. It just gets really... It gets really frustrating, and even when you know that it's more complex than that, that's sometimes really what it feels like. So that was the first situation. And the second situation was again in Mosul, and I was asked to assist in an interrogation as a female who spoke Arabic. I foolishly thought that they might have me interrogating a female prisoner as a sign of cultural sensitivity, and it was the opposite. When I actually got to the location, they told me they would want me to sit in a room, they would bring in a male prisoner, then remove his clothing and then his blindfold so that I would be the first thing that he saw, and we were then supposed to mock him and degrade his manhood in an attempt to break him down to get information. I was really horrified and sickened. I didn't know even what types of things to say. It's not something that, you know, I've ever practiced. And I was just horrified that the other soldiers seemed to enjoy it or think it was fun or funny. And I sat through it, but afterwards I approached the non-commissioned officer who was in charge and said, I think what you're doing may be illegal, and certainly anyone who walks in here innocent is going to walk out a terrorist, and I won't have any part of this.
What did he say?
And he said, I know, and he never asked me to participate again.
Do you think some of the treatment of the detainees arose from the generalized feelings about the Iraqi people that had built up in all of the soldiers?
Sure. I think that that's pretty likely. There's so much frustration that starts to build up among soldiers. I mean, I speak Arabic. I have friends who are Arabic. I like a lot of Arabic customs, and I love the food. I respect the religion. I don't have a problem with Arabic people in general. But even for me, and I could talk to the Iraqi people and communicate with them and form personal relationships with them, there came a point when I was just angry and just sick of it and just didn't want to deal with it anymore. And that happened much earlier and to much more of an extent, I believe, to a lot of the other soldiers that I knew. There were soldiers that I talked to that said, we should just nuke the region and be done with it.
Well, and it sounds as though there are days when you might go from helping build a soccer field or hand out aid supplies to driving down a road and your orders are, if some car full of civilians tries to pass you, it's okay to shoot them.
Not quite that extreme, but yes. We were on one convoy told that if we saw somebody on a cell phone on the side of the road and we gestured for them to hang up the phone and they wouldn't, that we could shoot them because they might be calling up information about our convoy. And of course, there were civilians calling up information about our convoys so that they could set up ambushes. But at the same time, I just feel on some really deep level that telling a bunch of 18-year-old kids that they can shoot people on the phone is just not necessarily the best idea.
Kayla Williams served in Iraq as a sergeant in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division. Williams' book is called Love My Rifle More Than You. Young and female in the U.S. Army, Anne Strangechamps spoke with her.